Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
In the age of Obama, we conservatives should not even express our opinions because it's kind of un-American to not salute neo-socialism. And maybe I should just tell personal stories and ignore the socialism of Obama completely and kind of not even talk about American values, borders, language, and culture. It's kind of antiquated to believe in borders, language, and culture, don't you think? If you'd rather me just, for the rest of my radio career, however long that may be, read you, from Psychological Nudity, or I can read from Healing Children Naturally, because I want to be a good American. I want to be an American who gets along and goes along. I want to be an American who is loved. I want to be an American who, well, just worships the Obamas. I mean, I want to read about them stepping out at night. I want to read more stories about Obama goes to dinner. I want to see more stories about the Obamas' walk in the park. I can't wait to get up in the morning and see Obama playing with his dog. I can't wait to see Obama, Mrs. Obama in her sneakers. Now, that's a true American. An un-American believes in antiquated things such as borders, you know, English as the language of the land, you know, stuff like, just nostalgic stuff that perhaps your grandfather believed in. Culture, you know, things like that, the Bible and... And there's no point talking about any of that anymore. 99% of Americans love Obama. Well, I think it's 99.9%. It isn't. We have to root out the 0.1% who don't love the Obamas. They're the real problem in America. And so, therefore, I think I will only talk about personal stories because, as I say, I want to be a true American. And any true American loves the Obamas. They worship the Obamas. He is the Messiah. And anyone who doesn't worship the Messiah is... Well, un-American. And perhaps Janet Napolitano should send a tax squad with black helicopters to find anyone who doesn't love the Obamas. That's the new America. And I don't want to be out of step with the times. I want to agree with the bloggers. I want to agree with MoveOn.org. I want to agree with Soros. I want to be a serf like every other serf. I want to surf with the serfs on the internet. And I want to enjoy my life. And the only way to enjoy my life in a growing fascistic society is to get along and go along. Now, I could tell you some political stories, but I really don't want to bum you out. So how about some family stories like One-Armed Frank or Louie and the Monkey? You know, oldie but goodie favorites. I can sing along like Tony Bennett and I Left My Heart in San Francisco and then get up and tell people like the canary he is, everyone should basically worship Obama. And if they don't, well, God knows. Or like Sean Penn, the genius, the man who can't put three sentences together without sounding like he was visiting three different pharmacies, goes and kisses the ring of the anti-Semite Chavez. The liberal media kisses the ring of Chavez, the most visible anti-Semite on the planet today. Do you know that the year Hugo Chavez was elected president, there were 22,000 Jews in Venezuela, but today the Jewish population is between 10,000 and 15,000? Those numbers tell a story of anti-Semitism in Hugo Chavez's Venezuela. But I don't want to talk about it because it will make me look like I'm un-American. And if Sean Penn, like Chavez, even though he's an anti-Semite, that makes me wrong, doesn't it? It makes me wrong to point out that the Jews are being driven out of Venezuela. It makes me wrong to tell you that the verbiage coming out of Chavez in Spanish, if translated to the German, could be that of Adolf Hitler in the 1930s. And if I told you that verbal and physical attacks on Jews and Jewish institutions in Venezuela in January, for example, were at their greatest level ever, I would make you uncomfortable, and then you might start doubting my Americanism. And I don't want you to doubt my Americanism. And if I tell you that in a report released by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom puts Venezuela on a watch list of countries where religious freedom is threatened, I don't want to make you think that in any way I'm against Chavez, because Chavez is a good buddy of Obama. After all, Obama and Chavez gave each other the ghetto fist slap, whatever they call it. And I'm sorry to be so out of touch with things that I don't know what the ghetto thing is when you hit fists together. I wish I could use the proper phrase for it. But our leader, our supreme leader, our Messiah, Obama, if he likes Chavez, then I like Chavez. If he says Chavez is a good guy, then I say Chavez is a good guy. And if the Jews are being driven out of Venezuela, well, I guess then we all have to accept that. Because after all, I want to get along and I want to go along. And I don't want to talk about this anymore. I don't want to talk about the Jews being driven out of Venezuela because Sean Penn and the other actors love Chavez. So how could I be right and how could they be wrong? After all, actors are always right. That's why people pay so much money to see them act. They are so good at acting that they must be right about politics. And they're never wrong about anything, so how could they be wrong about Chavez? So if I read that Chavez is a vicious anti-Semite whose language is that of Adolf Hitler in Spanish, why then I must be wrong. And I think that those who oppose Chavez, and in this case agree that Obama should not have visited him, I think that they're wrong. And that's why I say it may be time for me to simply get out of politics and get into storytelling. But, of course, if you wish I do the other, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, has political stories, I'm sorry to tell you. There are many political stories on the website because I'm thinking of converting the entire website to family photos, just black and white family photos from little old Kodak little booklets from the 50s and 60s, because I don't want to upset the social order, because the Messiah is right about everything, that I only want to see happiness in America. I don't want to oppose anybody who believes in Obama. I want to make all those who worship Obama feel good. I want all opposition to Obama to be eliminated. I want anyone who opposes Obama to be investigated. I want anyone who continuously talks against Obama to be jailed. And I want Janet Napolitano, one of the most brilliant women in the history of the world, greater than Marie Curie, possibly one of the most brilliant women in the history of the world, to be put on the Supreme Court. There is no one more brilliant than Janet Napolitano. After all, she wisely targeted returning vets from the Iraq and Afghan theaters as potential terrorists. She wisely targeted people who oppose the murder of unborn children as terrorists. She wisely targeted many, many other fringe groups in America as potential terrorists and paid no attention to our visitors from Central America with tattoos all over their bodies who sell drugs and murder in the streets as threats to America, because she is a wise woman. She knows that if she reaches out to the tattooed clusters of illegals in America, if she reaches out and embraces the clusters of illegal aliens carrying bed bugs, cholera, and other diseases, why, the bed bugs will flee back south of the border. The cholera will flee back south of the border. There will be no disease if only she is kind to them. And the only way to be kind to them is to be hateful towards true Americans, or shall I say, old Americans, patriotic Americans. In fact, anyone who declares themselves to be a patriot should be investigated by the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the CIA. And I think special detention camps, well, let us say re-education camps, should be set up by Janet Napolitano, where she can educate anyone who considers themselves a patriot as to how to think in the new America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, I realized the old York Times, I couldn't sleep last night. I went to sleep 8:30 at night and got up 2 in the morning and laid in bed until about 3 when I heard the newspaper thwop on the driveway. And I said, my God, what a high-carbon thing this is, newspaper delivery. This is really high-carbon. That paper comes to me. Think about it. Some poor immigrant gets up probably at midnight, picks up this stack of dead trees and printer's ink, drives around spewing carbon from his old you know, leftover, you know, like a Toyota, whatever, poor guy, poor woman, and drives around with this heavy piece of newspaper, throws it on my driveway. I said, what would Pinchy Sulzberg do if someone pointed out that just delivering newspapers is a high-carbon experience? In fact, most of the stories about the myth of global warming are put out by these newspapers, these comic books for stupid adults. And they're delivered in the most high-carbon fashion imaginable. See, most of the people who read the Internet have read competing theories on what's causing this slight uptick in global temperature. And I say slight uptick, like maybe a half a degree a century. I'm a boater, for God's sakes. The tide charts were written a long time ago. They're accurate, down to the inch. There's been no rise in sea level anywhere. I keep calendar year after calendars, year after year. It's about the same temperature year after year, the same thing, over and over again. But if you look at the data, there's been like a half a degree in 100 years. Whether man is doing it, whether it's anthropogenic, is the argument. But those who are disseminating the idea that the world is about to come to an end because of global warming are mainly those who write for newspapers. And those who read it are generally people with lower intelligences who simply read newspapers. But what they don't realize is that the vehicle that is delivering the news to them about so-called global warming is really a very high-carbon delivery system. I thought about that 3 a.m. I had to entertain myself somehow to keep from climbing the walls altogether. Now, maybe that's the sign of intelligence. Do you know that I dream in not only 3D but Technicolor? If I could tell you the number of dreams I have every night, and I remember all of them in detail, I actually painted paintings last night. In my sleep, I painted masterpieces where I saw the brush, I saw the paint, I saw the bubbles of the paint. I couldn't believe this. I actually look forward to going to sleep every night because my dreams are far more interesting than my life. I have the most phenomenally interesting dreams, more interesting than any movies I've ever seen. And the older I get, the more interesting my dreams become. I'm starting to wonder if, you know, that's not the other world. The next world is over there. Wow. Interesting world. So anyway, to make a long story short, the high-carbon newspaper comes on the driveway. And I got it this morning, and I put 2 yellow tags on the old York Times. One is, Turk lawmakers. They're so PC, the Times. Not Turkey, not Turkish, but Turk lawmakers. They always look up the right way to say things to not be offensive. That they're experts on. Their IQ is very high on non-offense. Turk lawmakers grant authority for raids in Iraq. Why Turk? Well, because some of the lawmakers may not be Turkish. They could be Kurdish. You see? See how smart they are, the boys from NYU? You see how smart, how they use their intelligence? But they don't tell you it was Nancy Pelosi who forced the Turkish parliament, or shall I say the Turk parliament, both old and young Turks, to vote to invade northern Iraq to confront Kurdish rebels. It was Nancy Pelosi and her Democrats who actually provoked this. That they don't tell you. Next article that I noted was, this is a shocker. A shocker. U.S. concerned as Iraq awards power deals to Iran and China. I almost fell over when I read this. Those backstabbing SOBs in Iraq, they're the most miserable people on earth are the Iraqis. They are the most backstabbing group of SOBs on the entire planet. These rats, we've spent, what, trillions of dollars liberating them from Saddam, and now when they have a little oil flowing and they have money, they're going to award the construction of power plants to Iran and China? Those backstabbing vermin. I wouldn't let them do it. But why should we permit them to do it? What, are you kidding me? What kind of government do we have? They take our money to liberate those ingrates in filthy nightshirts who continue to kill each other's women and children outside mosques, and then to add insult to injury, when they're about to build power plants, they award it to Iran and China, the construction contracts. This never would have happened in World War II. After Germany was devastated and during Reconstruction, I doubt very much that contracts would have been awarded to anyone other than General Electric, General Motors, etc., since our nation had been depleted in fighting World War II, you would figure that perhaps we want to refill the coffers in some manner. But this, again, is an example of the lack of leadership in the administration. I have to tell you that. Who else do you blame for this? U.S. concerned as Iraq awards power deals to Iran and China. How could they do this? How could you permit Iranians to come and build power plants in Iraq. How could you do this unless you're an absolute idiot and totally out of control? So then that's at 3 in the morning. You see what bothers me? No wonder I sleep so much. You wake up to this kind of news, it's no wonder that I dream in Technicolor. Putin attacks U.S. foreign policy, announces new nuclear weapon. This is getting ugly. This is getting ugly. He says that they're building a new nuclear submarine, Russia. You hear this? And he said we have grandiose plans, and they are absolutely realistic. And he said we are going to develop a new generation nuclear weapon that will stun the world. We haven't heard anything from the Federation of Concerned Atomic Scientists. They're suddenly silent when their good friend in Russia is talking about building a new generation of nuclear weapons. They only have big yaps on them when it comes to the American military having a nuclear weapon. But if Russia, oh, they're entitled to it. Federation of Concerned Scientists, all fellow traveler communist wobblies, all of them. All raised in Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, over oilcloth by ILGWU parents who taught them to hate the country and to spit on the ground every time they left the apartment, in my opinion. How come they have nothing to say about Putin saying he's going to develop a new generation of nuclear weapon? How can he say, when he said that Russia will build another nuclear submarine, we didn't hear any of these anti-nuke lefties go crazy in America. He says that they're also planning a completely new atomic weapon. How come they didn't get excited over that and say that it's 1 minute to midnight? Those morons. Commies, that's what they are, 100%. Boy, do we need a nationalistic government? Wow, I don't see how we're going to survive. Anyways, I made one new point that you never heard before. Newspapers are high-carbon deliveries, which is very funny, actually, when you think about it. You could now throw this in the face of your newspaper-reading friends. That Savage said that the paper you're reading is a high-carbon vehicle. Tell that to Phil Bronstein. All of these guys who are in the newspaper business, when you think about it, they're all, oh, they're so liberal. They're all, oh, yeah, global warming. They walk around like high priests of global warming with a sanctimoniousness that you need a clothespin on your nose to prevent the stench from entering your being. Oh, yeah, they're the high priests of global warming and everything else politically correct. And how do they deliver these ideas? Through the most high-carbon form of communication that there is. Newspapers in a driveway or in a newsstand delivered by a gas-stenching, a fume-stenching truck.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
As I say, we're trying this out. It's the former national anthem of the ex-Soviet Union, the Communist Soviet Union, the Internationale. And in light of my desire to fit in with the new government and the new policies of the presidency, Congress, the judiciary, which is all Democrat. Now, Democrat, of course, is a very wide statement, as you well know. John F. Kennedy was a Democrat, but by today's standard, he'd be a right-winger. When you say Democrat today, you mean the American Socialist Party. And as I've said to you for years, the Republican Party is basically the liberal party of today, and the Democrats is the... You could call them the Democrat Socialist Party, but that's again, far too much for the average listener. So that's why we're thinking of apologizing for all the years of talking about borders, language, and culture. We're going to also possibly, we're thinking about rebranding this show to the Peaceful Nation, because we don't want to upset anyone. We want to call ourselves the Peaceful Nation, and we want to expunge our violent past where we conducted war against the poor, peaceful Germans and the poor, peaceful communists in Vietnam, for example. I want to rebrand us as the Peaceful Nation. I want to forget all of this rubbish about D-Day, for example. All this nonsense about the greatest generation. It's time that we don't teach it anymore. This idea that we were the good ones and the Germans were the bad ones, or that we were the good ones and the Japanese were the imperialists who imprisoned Koreans and such. I think that that should be put aside in the new America, because this is an inclusive country now. It's a nation that's just very broad and accepting. And in order to be accepted around the world, We need the president to go to Japan next and apologize for the two atomic bombs. Now, he's apologized across one-third of the globe, but there's still two-thirds of the globe to go. I think that in the next few months, we're going to beg the president, I mean the Messiah, I mean the chairman, the new chairman Obama, to go to Germany and perhaps go to an SS cemetery and apologize to the Germans for taking away the flower of their youth 70 years ago in some misguided notion of liberation. Because this is a new world order where there are no borders. It's an America that transcends all borders and all history, transcends all languages and all cultures. And the least important culture on earth, of course, is the American culture. The least important race on the planet is the white race. And the important thing to remember is that it's a new world order under a new man who has brought new hope and new promise. And that's why I say it's time to put all of these thoughts aside. And so, ladies and gentlemen, as I say, since this is the new way, since this is the new world order, since there's no stopping the tidal wave of lies, deceit, arrogance, and absolute un-Americanism emanating from the highest office, I think that it's time to get along and go along. And that's why I say today we're rechanging the show to the peaceful nation. Because the last thing we would want is to see me on a watch list of the Homeland Security or the FBI or the CIA. I want them to understand that I'm a team player, that I'm not a loose cannon, that I'll get along and I'll go along. And so, as I say, whatever the government wants of me, I'm willing to do. And I'm even willing to go so far as to myself offer several initiatives. And one of them would be this. Although over the years I've called for stronger borders and the deportation of illegal aliens, I think today I'm going to call for the relocation of all white people who have lived here for more than 50 years in order to give the newcomers from the South a chance. Just for the sake of fairness and balance, we should force all whites over the age of 50 to leave the country, perhaps with their possessions, perhaps not, in order to give all of these newcomers from the South a chance, the newcomers who have put all the Democrats in power and have kept them there for these last 20 years. You see what I mean? It's time for them to appreciate the beauties of America, and it's time for those who've enjoyed this fair nation to move on. Time to pack up your kit bag and move along. Now it's time for the callers on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. Oh, yes, there's a story on my website that I linked up from the failing San Francisco Chronicle, a newspaper that's losing $1.5 million a week. A million and a half a week. It's not their money. They certainly won't change their policies. They'd rather be out of business collecting crazy checks in the cafes of San Francisco than ever recognize the fact that they drove their newspaper to bankruptcy. So there's an article about bed bugs in San Francisco. Apparently there's a bed bug epidemic in the city, and it's not just limited to single room occupancy hotels anymore. Oh no, it's in various neighborhoods now. It's way out of the cheap poor neighborhoods. The bed bugs have proliferated throughout San Francisco, but there's no mention of where they came from. It's as though the bed bugs were created by spontaneous creation. You've heard of spontaneous emission. And, of course, you've heard of spontaneous combustion, but you've not heard of spontaneous creation yet. But according to the liberal, bed bugs may have been created by spontaneous creation, created simply out of the air in order to make immigrants look bad. New York City, Stewart, line one from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, in line with your comments, I'd like to volunteer to be the first white male over 50 to leave the country, but not only leave the country, but give away all of my possessions that I've worked hard for to the first illegal family that comes forward.
Well, you should, Stuart, because you've had a good number of years in America, haven't you?
It's been enough.
And in a certain way, if you think about it, you stole it from the descendants of the Aztecs. In a strange way, all those years you were working, whatever you may have been doing, you really were taking it from the Aztecs in a certain way.
I didn't deserve it in the first place.
Well, let's not be abstract. I mean, you actually extracted the gold that you hoarded from the Aztecs themselves.
That's a nice way of saying I stole it. Let's call a spade.
Well, I wouldn't be that harsh because this is now the peaceful nation. I'm not as abrupt as I was last week.
Extracted, found.
Now, let me ask, speaking of gold, when you are asked to leave America, do you happen to have any gold teeth?
No.
I mean, any gold fillings, perhaps?
There must be a watch I have laying around somewhere.
Well, I would think that the government should be able to ask you to contribute any gold fillings you have, because this could help balance the budget. There's no better way to make certain that the newcomers are comfortable in this country than to make certain that the whites who are being asked to leave behind all of their gold, including that in their teeth. And by the way, Stuart, I really think that you should eschew normal airline or travel of that kind, because the government said that they have a lot of rolling stock that's empty right now, and that they're going to be using this rolling stock to transport the people, because it's actually kind of invigorating for their health to be exposed to the elements.
One other thing, Mike, despite the fact that I'm a white male and therefore the lowest rung on the totem pole and at the end of the line, I'm going to give my spot away to an illegal. I don't deserve even
that. It's only fair. It's only fair that an illegal alien get your possessions. Well, whether it comes to that or not is debatable, but what is certain to come is that what we see going on in Venezuela will happen in America unless the Messiah is exposed for what he is. Do you know that it is now illegal for anyone in Venezuela to own more than one house? Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Anybody who owns more than one house is considered a hoarder and an enemy of the state. And just as the Jews have been driven out of Venezuela, property owners have been flooding out of Venezuela. Did you know that it's also illegal to remove more than $4,000 a year from a bank in Venezuela? And that's to make certain that Father Chavez can appropriate the money for his needs for a better nation. And since our great leader and Chavez got along so greatly, what was that ghetto thing they did with the fists? What's that called, Stuart? You're from New York.
What is what?
When they tap the fists, what's that called?
That's a brother to brother. White males need not bother.
I see. So it was a signal between Obama and Chavez that, although they can't say it quite yet, they're blood brothers in some way?
Not even subtle. Oh, they're brothers of the first degree.
And Obama took that book of blaming America for robbing everyone in South America, not talking, of course, about the tin pot dictators nor the folks who cut hearts out and threw the hearts down the Aztec monuments. None of that was discussed. It was all because the white man grew rubber in Brazil.
Mike, I'm taking it one step further. Not only am I giving everything up and headed to Mexico, I want them to experiment on me to see if they can use me to find a cure to swine flu. I think that's...
Well, you know, that's a very, very, very noble gesture of yours. You mean you would actually volunteer to live inside a pig pen?
Hey, I've always wanted to, and it sounds like...
You know, that's a nice idea, because, look, you've had a number of good years here in America, right, Stuart?
Look, it's enough. I've lived...
It's
well
enough. You know, yeah, that's right. And the last year should be spent in medical research.
What more could I do for my fellow man? I mean,
that's right. You know, it's ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for Obama.
That's exactly what I'm trying
to. Ask not what Obama can do for you, but what you can do for Obama.
I want my tax money to go to him.
Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Obama. That's the important thing to remember in any language. Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Obama. I'll be right back. Now, here's a true childhood story that I may have told once in 15 years of radio. Barry Schmaltz and his crazy mother, Betty Schmaltz, and his father, Louis Schmaltz. The names have been changed to protect the Schmaltzes. Let's see. How do I begin the story? He was about 15 years old. He was a tall kid. His bedroom, pink carpet, two-story house, nice house. He's having a fist fight with his father in the bedroom over something his mother said. It ends with him crying and enraged because he knew he could beat the heck out of his father after a few real good punches were thrown. I don't know if you ever seen a father and son fight. It's actually heartbreaking to see. To me, it was a violation of a very deeply held taboo. Never to strike your father, no matter what. Well, I don't know, but that family was crazy from top to bottom. They went at each other with straight rights and blasted each other. And it ended with the kid holding his punches, because I think he could have really knocked his father on his butt. He picked up a piggy bank that to me was like, looked like a 25-pound piggy bank that he had had, a ceramic one, since I knew him for 10 years. And he was enraged and red-faced and tears running down his eyes. He looked at his father, and he smashed the piggy bank on the floor, and all the coins that he had collected since childhood was smashed. And then the father threw him out of the house, and he wound up living in my mother's in our basement for a little while. Now, I don't know this guy anymore, but let me tell you what happened that day. Here's what happened that day. His mother was a would-be, like, movie star, as many women were in the 50s. They were always trying to be like either not Marilyn Monroe, but there were some buxom movie like Jane Mansfield, more like that type. Cadillac, the platinum blonde hair, always showing off. And the father was a worker, gray-faced. He'd come home gray-faced from his job. He owned a little wholesale milk business. So they were a little better off than us somehow. But she had the Cadillac, the Coupe de Ville, pink one. And a whack job, nuts, out of her mind. Why? She was always trying to lose weight. She went to some doctor in New Jersey who put her on Benzedrine or some kind of amphetamines, which gave her a madness, a Benny high. And so she comes home crazy out of her mind, and she takes a dog chain, and a dog chain, and beats her wrist till it bleeds just before the father comes in at dusk. Ashen-faced from the day in the milk plant, and she says, Louie, look what your rotten son did to me. Look what he did to my hands. Well, Louie, the father, naturally would be protective of his wife. He runs upstairs and screams to the kid, Barry, what did you do to your mother? And the kid says, I didn't do anything. You liar, you. And that's when they fought. And that's when it happened. That's when the piggy bank. So from the crazy mother, Betty Schmaltz, who turned Louie against Barry. Now, you say drug usage is prevalent today. Let me tell you something. There's plenty of drug usage in those glorious Eisenhower days, but it was Sub Rosa drug usage. Half the women were either on Miltown or on Benzedrine for diet. Miltown was as popularly prescribed then as Prozac, let's say, is today. You know, a lot of kids came home from college and used a little Miltown with rosé wine, Meduse rosé. They got a nice buzzeroo during the afternoons when the mother wasn't home. So I'm telling you, that's the Schmaltz story. It's a sad story. And the kid wound up basically a bug all his life. He was never stable. Well, I haven't seen him in many years. Right? He was a good friend of mine, but he's not a reliable friend because when a kid can't rely upon his mother or his father, he winds up to be an unreliable person in life 99% of the time. He winds up to be someone you can't count on because he can never count on somebody else.
Savage.
You know how I love my dog Teddy, the 10-pound, 11-pound miniature poodle? He's like a piece of me, okay? I love the guy. Now, usually about 3 in the morning, he rustles around in the bed and he forces me to get up, which is convenient for a male, actually. I get up anyway, and he goes out in the garden, and I stand there freezing or whatever. Then I let him back in, and then he goes back to sleep until we get up in the morning. But lately, I'm like on strike. I don't want to get up at 3 in the morning and stand there and watch him take a dump in the garden. So what I did last night was he started like rustling around 3 a.m. I knew what it meant. But I'm not in a great mood lately, and I wasn't able to get up for a damn dog and to go watch him, you know, stand in a garden there freezing. So I said, leave me alone, Teddy. Just do what you have. Just leave me alone. So he settled down. I figured, all right, I get up in the morning. Everything's fine. And no sign of nothing, this and that. Then I put him in the garden. I see he's doing the circle thing and the squat that makes every dog look like freakish and ugly. And I turned away. I didn't want to see it. But I figured, all right, thank God he waited the night. But it was a slow day. Everything's starting slow. The coffee machine didn't work. The Italian machine, it makes noise, and it comes up with refer to manual, and you call and talk to some kid in Newark with like a Rocky accent put in the filter. And I almost got scalded in my groin. I couldn't make coffee. I had to go back to the Sears $10 coffee machine. The white trash coffee cup worked fine. I go downstairs to my studio, and boom, Guess what Teddy had done? Crapped all over where I sit next to the microphone and the screens. He never did this. Of all the places in the house, look how smart they are and how they'll get even with you because I didn't take him out. He didn't go in a corner under a curtain. He didn't run to the back door and say, Dad, if you find this, it's because you were bad to me. He went downstairs in the dark of night, snuck into my studio where I broadcast from, or I'm sitting in front of the computer all day looking for idiotic stories to report on, and he all over the floor. And here, he's here with me now in the radio studio. I didn't hit him. I didn't yell. I just left. That's all. I packed up and got out of the house, and here I am in another house. So what am I going to do? What am I going to do with this world? The dog is even – he's even breaking down from the stress of this world. Who can take this? O.R., New York City. Anita, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Michael Savage. How are you? I loved hearing about Teddy.
Well, but it's terrible. I mean, you know, my life with Teddy, here it is. It's the ups and downs. It's like a child, you know. But who expected him to pull that stunt on me?
When you speak of him, it sounds like a little child. He does.
But he is like, I call him, I don't know how to put it to you this way. When my children grew up and left, there was a vacuum in the house that's the only parents who've, you know, had a child and have raised the child. When the child leaves, there's a vacuum that enters your heart, your mind, and your soul that only a parent can appreciate. And that's the good news, meaning they go off to college or whatever. You know what I'm saying? God forbid you should lose a child. I can't imagine that hole. But the point I'm making is when you replace that loss or that emptiness with it with a dog, they really become like a child to you in a way, strangely enough. If you love animals, you don't have to become a sicko to take care of the child. He's in many ways, he's like a two-year-old child.
Exactly. I love animals personally. Myself, I just love them.
Yeah, well, do you love them when they crap on the floor under your desk? I don't.
Well, you just have to clean it up. I mean, that's what
I... Ugh, I didn't clean it up. I ran out of the house. I think it's still waiting for me when I come home tonight. Kill him when I get there. He's sitting here looking at him smiling. Makes believe he don't know from nothing. I didn't even hit him. What can you do after the fact? He knows what he did. He knows what he did. He did it because I wouldn't get up. So tonight I have a real dilemma. Now I won't even be able to fall asleep for fear that I'll fall asleep and I won't wake up. I don't know what he'll do next. Nah, I'm not going to let him train me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I now want to turn my attention back to what I began with, which is immigrants and epidemics. And I told you that this new form of influenza A virus coming out of Mexico, which is a combination of human swine flu strains, could be, and I say could be, a terrorist attack upon America. And that is because of the lack of border controls. That's because we have Janet Napolitano in Homeland Security. That's because we have a moron running the CDC. They're telling you now the most you should do to protect yourself against this flu is to wash your hands. It's the same incompetence we saw with the outbreak of the AIDS epidemic when they told you not to alter your behavior but to use condoms. And so I tell you again, you have the power in your own hands to do certain things to protect yourself from this emerging flu epidemic. The first thing is, and I don't care how politically incorrect this is, it's whether your health matters to you or not. I really don't care whether you like what I'm to say to you. I don't care whether you like it or not. Use common sense. I realize that unto itself is a revolutionary statement in a time when there is no common sense. But because I am a man of a certain age who grew up in another time and can still think, I'm going to give you some commonsensical things you can do during a time of epidemics, because it's been done going back to the first flu pandemic of 1918, which wiped out a good portion of the earth, of the earth's population. Number one, you want to start with common sense that your mother would have told you, or your father would have told you? Stay away from crowds. Number two, you're eating in a restaurant? You better make certain that the people working in the kitchen are not illegal aliens, because if they are, you're running a very high risk of the flu virus being transmitted to you. I don't care what anyone tells you. I'm telling you the emiss on this. That's the way it is. I don't care what this rotten, lying, thieving government tells you. I'm giving you the truth. Now, a government that is set up to protect the people would slam the border shut with Mexico. If we didn't have a moron running Homeland Security, that border would be locked down until they get a grip on what this is. But because we have nothing but incompetent bureaucrats running everything, they can't even protect us from this emerging virus. They can't protect you from anything. They couldn't protect you from a radiological device. If they knew it was about to go off, they'd have to consult a 10,000-page manual. And so you have to take precautions yourself. There are other commonsensical things you can do, and I think you can pretty much figure them out yourself. Now, with regard to your own internal immune system, very complicated. B cells you've heard of, T cells you've heard of, macrophages, antibodies, complement, thymus, bone marrow, lymph nodes, spleen, the tonsils, the appendix, and the interferons that are produced by your cells themselves. Maybe you've heard some of these words over the years, maybe you haven't. But I want to remind you that I wrote one of the groundbreaking books, popular books in the field, called Maximum Immunity, back in, what year was this, 1986, published by Houghton Mifflin Company. It was published in 16 languages. I don't need the approval of flatulent Larry King. I don't need the approval of flatulent Larry King or Katie Coran to put a kosher stamp on it. 16 languages is good enough for me. So I know a little bit about the immune system. I'm not a virologist, nor am I an immunologist, but I have common sense, and I also know a little bit about the immunity connection and how you can raise your IQ, your immunity quotient. And the first thing I would recommend to you is watch out where you associate, watch out with whom you associate. Don't shake anybody's hands. I mean, you may sound that's crazy. The Chinese have known this going back to the age of the plague. That's why the Chinese generally didn't shake hands. It's a very wise thing to do. No more handshaking. Do I have to give you the other commonsensical things that people have forgotten over the years? Now let us go to the food supply itself. God only knows, only God can help us. Because of NAFTA and open borders, we have no idea who touched the food that you're going to consume. I would therefore be very, very careful of any raw foods. I wouldn't eat any raw foods. Point blank, I would not eat any raw foods. I would cook everything and make certain it's cooked thoroughly before I eat it. I don't have to go into pork itself. Let's put that on the side. I wouldn't think you have to think about that too many different times. Now, they're saying that this virus mutated from pigs and was transmitted to humans. I'm not so sure that is true. There is certainly a possibility that our dear friends in the Middle East cooked this up in a laboratory somewhere in a cave and brought it into Mexico, knowing that our incompetent government would not protect us from this epidemic because of open borders policies. And so I say you better be very, very careful. Now, let's go to the next few things that I would recommend that you start thinking about. Most of the intelligent people in America have been taking vitamins and minerals and such for at least 30 years. Now, forget what the hacks, the drug pushers tell you. Certainly there's a place for drugs once you're sick, but I certainly would recommend that you bolster your immune system by using the commonsensical devices that you've been using for years. I raised my children on the Linus Pauling, Ewan Cameron theories, which are greatly proven by the great numbers of people who have used these theories to their advantage in using mega doses of vitamin C and other vitamins. I do not care what the hacks at the Mayo Clinic say. They are worthless. They're all party boys and party girls. If a vitamin works, they try to disprove it in order to make certain that you only go to your drug pusher, your MD, who makes certain that you buy another medication put out by the medical pharmaceutical establishment, you know, approved by the government, so to speak. So again, as I say to you, there are many things that you can do to increase your resistance to a virus. Does it mean that you're definitely going to protect yourself? Absolutely not. But I strongly recommend that if you fear any exposure to this or any other virus, and you see some of these symptoms coming on, first of all, you got to understand there's no medicine to treat a viral illness like this. If a doctor tells you to take an antibiotic, you ought to sue your doctor. It's the first sign of a quack. If he treats a viral illness with an antibiotic, which was designed to treat a bacterial illness. So understand that if he tells you to go home and just drink liquids, he's another quack. Okay? Another quack. What you have to do is stimulate your immune system. You've got to stimulate your T cells. And you've got to do so in the only ways that we know how. And that is through proper diet, moderate, and I repeat, very moderate exercise. And you've got to take much more vitamin C than you've been taking. Now, just taking a pill with 30 milligrams, the amount you find in an orange, is absolutely criminal. It is insufficient. The so-called RDA is a joke. The RDAs are minimums, not optimal amounts. I would suggest that you take what I've been taking, and I'm not selling any vitamins right now. Maybe I should have, but I don't. I've avoided that all of my life. I've never put out a line of vitamins for you. Maybe one day I won't. But I would suggest that you get vitamin C powder. And the reason I say powder is because most of the vitamin C pills are useless garbage. You may as well inhale talcum powder for what's in most of these vitamin pills. And the good test of a sufficient amount of vitamin C or ascorbic acid I will give you. It was developed by my very dear friend, who died last year, by the way. He was a great friend of mine and a mentor of mine for 30 years. Bob Cathcart, Dr. Bob Cathcart, medical doctor, worked out of Los Altos, California. Great man. And the Cathcart hypothesis of vitamin C usage is something that the medical establishment sadly has rejected. But Bob treated over 25,000 people with viral illnesses and some very severe viral illnesses, all with very, very good success. And he developed what was called the bowel tolerance hypothesis of vitamin C use. Now, what does that mean? Here's what it means. When you're healthy, you can take a very small amount of vitamin C before you develop any bowel intolerance, meaning flatulence or gas. And so let's say you're a healthy person and you're taking 500 milligrams a day, a half a gram. And then you raise it up to a gram, you'll start to see that at a certain point, you're going to develop symptoms of gas. That's the point at which you stop taking the vitamin C. And you maintain it at that level. So let's say it's at 500 milligrams. Any more than that, you get gas. So take the 500 milligrams a day. But at the first signs of not feeling good, and I've helped many people in my life using this, and they're all astounded by it every time. They say, oh, Mike, how come that worked? Gee, I tried vitamin C before. Well, that's of course because they were taking vitamin C tablets, which contained virtually useless amounts of vitamin C, and they weren't taking sufficient amounts for it to have any medical effect whatsoever. So at the first sign of, let's say, the sniffles, even if it's a cold, what you do is you start to slowly increase the amount of vitamin C you're taking. That's why I say use powder. And so you go from, let's say, a standard amount of a gram a day, which is what I use, which is 1,000 milligrams every day for the last 35 years, and you start to increase it 2 grams, 3 grams, 4 grams. Now, how much is 4 grams of vitamin C? You take a teaspoon, put it into the jug of vitamin C powder. It's a flat teaspoonful. Is about 4 grams. Now, I said flat, I mean flat. I don't mean heaping. I mean a flat teaspoonful is a lot of vitamin C. It's 4 grams. But it's not a lot if you're sick. You will find that if you took that teaspoonful, that flat teaspoonful of vitamin C when you're healthy, you'd get diarrhea because your body would be kicking it out of your bowel. It doesn't need it. It doesn't want it. It rejects it. But you'll find that the first symptoms of a cold or a flu that you can probably take 4 grams every 2 hours, if not more. And you'll find out that you can take it without developing any bowel intolerance. That is, you're not going to get flatulence, you're not going to get diarrhea, because your body is using every molecule of ascorbic acid in order to marshal your own defenses against the invading virus in that case. And so, again, we come back to this flu epidemic that is now surfacing in Mexico and has appeared in California and Texas. amongst the immigrant community, which, of course, the government will hush up and cover up, because right now Obama is putting the ink on a plan to legalize 30 million illegal aliens. This is God's hand, by the way. This is God trying to save America from this demonic desire to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens. There must be a unified stance against this attempt to steamroll us on what we all know to be a national suicide. And if this epidemic is not sufficient cause for alarm, then I would say we do not deserve a nation.
Savage.
Let us go to the callers then. KPRC in Houston, Texas. Peter, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Doctor. Friends and I are having a discussion. I'd like to hear your opinion about it. It's Shakespeare. I know you're a lover of language. Pin would mean a lot. Shakespeare, thine own self be true. A lot of people take that to mean that don't fool yourself. And a couple of us are also on the other side saying that actually what it means is that sometimes your own counsel and your own opinion is your best opinion. To thine own self, we'd like to hear your opinion.
To thine own self be true. Well, you're asking me what I think it means?
Yes.
I think it's pretty self-evident what that means, which is no matter what people are saying to you, if you know that it's not right for you or not the truth, to thine own self be true. Listen to your own self. Now, does that mean, see, here's an interesting thing. An ultra-liberal would take that to mean it's licensed to do anything you want. But the question is, what is your true self? You can analyze that, meaning to thine own self. What is your own self? When I was younger trying to understand what self was, I saw a series of boxes within boxes within boxes. Where is the self? Keep peeling away the onion skin, and what do you find at the center? And at a certain point, if you're an atheist, you find nothing at the center, and you get very frightened. It's only by finding God or refinding God, because God originally is in all of us, that you find where yourself lies. And once you find God, there are a set of rules, and then you have a self, and then you have a self to be true to. But without a core, without a self, you can lead to total anarchy. You can wind up doing anything with that so-called concept of self. I don't know if this is an answer, Peter. It was a little roundabout. Does it help in any way?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I know the phone's breaking up. That was not a bad soliloquy I just gave. I think the old bard would be proud of me. But remember what I just said. I think that should be captured. That's a very nice philosophical starting point for you to understand what that means. To thine own self be true. Does that mean follow any impulse you have? Why, that can't be what to thine own self be true means. You have an impulse to set a cat on fire. Is that yourself? Or is that some demonic impulse you have? Is that some out of control, repressed impulse? And what you'll wind up with is, what they're doing in Menclaw, having sex with a horse. Is that your own self? Or is that an evil impulse that was in somehow instilled into a person through a series of degradations of the soul? And first the loss of God, and then the soul implodes worse than Chernobyl. And into that vacuum enters the devil, if you want to put it in medieval theological terms. You want to put it in current psychological terms, you need to have a core self in order to be true to it. What is that core self? Where does it come from? How do you build a self? Isn't education about building a child's self? Think about this for a minute. I don't want to get into this too much, but I'll do it for another minute. When you have a child, you really don't know much about life as you should know till you raise a child. I got to tell you that right now. As intelligent, as kind, as brilliant as you might be, until you have seen a child born of your own, and until you have raised that child through thick and through thin, from dirty diapers to the diploma and beyond, day in and day out, worrying about their safety and their sanity, you don't really have a full understanding of what it is to be a full human. That's how I see it. And that's the way nature intended it to be. That doesn't mean there aren't brilliant, wonderful people who don't have children. Don't get me wrong. But there is another layer of difference between that and being a parent and sticking with the child. Anyone can be a parent. A dog can be a parent. Many, many men today are like dogs. They think because they impregnated a woman, they're a father. That doesn't make you a father, impregnating a woman. You know better than a dog. A father sticks with the child even if he doesn't want to. That's a father. That's a husband. That's the meaning of a husband. Anybody could run away and find another person to engage in that activity with, but a father sticks around. But anyway, I don't want to go there. So now, how do you raise a child? What are you trying to do with a child? You're trying to teach him right from wrong? Of course you are. So where do you begin? You let him watch pornography? You let him smoke a joint? Well, of course not. Even a liberal would say, I'm not going to let my child smoke a joint because those are evil influences. What are they going to do to him?
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Speaking of our incompetent government here in The Savage Nation, the biggest liar in the history of the world, Al Gore, was invited to Congress by the lying Democrats to put out his phony propaganda about man-induced global warming. Now, we've heard the lies before. We're actually going through a cooling phase, which we all know. There was another gentleman who was invited to speak to Congress. His name is Lord Christopher Monckton. He was invited to speak in Congress by Representative Joe Barton of Texas. When he arrived from London, he was told that Representative Henry Waxman, the gentleman with overly large nostrils, has barred him, and would bar him, rather, from appearing before Congress. Now, we're not living in the ex-Soviet Union, are we? Where only one side is permitted to speak? Or are we now living in the ex-Soviet Union under Chairman Obama? Well, thank God we still have talk radio, because here's the other side of the story. The story that Obama did not want you to hear about the global warming lies. Lord Christopher Monckton is now on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program, my friend. What happened there?
Well, it's a great pleasure to hear you, and it's grand to be in Washington on this lovely sunny day. And the extraordinary thing was that the Republicans, of course, as you know, being the minority elected in Congress, have the right, as representatives of those who elected them and sent them to Congress, to nominate witnesses to testify in front of important congressional commissions, in this case, mm-hmm. the Committee on Energy and Commerce, of the House of Representatives, which is considering a bill to close down 83% of the U.S. economy in the name of saving the planet from global warming. Haven't these
now, people... Wait, Lord Monckton, I must introduce you to my audience. You were the former science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and you were still banned from speaking alongside Gore?
I was going to be speaking alongside Gore. The way it happened was that earlier in the week, the Democrats told the Republicans they were going to have an unnamed, at that stage, celebrity witness appearing on the committee about this bill. And so the Republicans, reasonably enough, as you may think, said that they too would have an unnamed celebrity witness, namely myself. Mm-hmm. And that all went fine until, finally, the Democrats said, well, our witness is going to be Gore. Who is yours going to be? And the moment they heard it was going to be Monckton, they said, oh, no, we don't want him. We're terrified of him. Can we have somebody else or nobody else? We don't want
what?
Monckton at all.
They didn't like – wait, why are they terrified of you?
I think it's because I've done a little bit of reading about the science, which poor Gore hasn't done. And
yes.
You've just described him as the biggest liar that there ever was. And certainly today in his testimony, I went anyway and sat and listened to him and tried to shake him by the hand, but his goons surrounded him and pushed me away. Not very polite
really?
Either, is he?
Gee, I thought they were going to be the most open Congress in history. I guess this goes along with Chairman Mao Obama's new administration.
I'm afraid it's all very much of a piece. I mean, these people are not lovers of free speech, nor are they lovers of the scientific truth. They listen to the usual rubbish from Al Gore, and it's not as though it was new rubbish. I mean, it's old rubbish that the High Court in London condemned roundly by saying, and I'm going to quote exactly from the judge in the kind of custard-faced voice that they use. The judge said, the Armageddon scenario that he depicts is not based on any scientific view. And that was...
Please tell the American people, Lord Monckton, tell the American people what happened in England when a father who was a truck driver was so offended by the lying propaganda movie that was put out on global warming that he sued It was taken to the high court, and didn't they find that they had to run a competitive series of facts alongside the film for the children?
He did, yeah, quite right. It was Stuart Dimmock was his name. He's a very nice man. He was a lorry driver and father of two school-age kids who was absolutely fed up when these kids came home and told him that time and time and time again in their geography classes, their science classes, their environment classes, their green classes, their green week, they were made to watch this same mawkish sci-fi comedy horror movie from Al Gore. And then Dimmock discovered that the United Kingdom government was proposing to give away copies of Gore's movie, which they were paying $20 a time to Gore for, to every school in England so that everybody would be made to watch it all again. And so Dimmock just said, I'm not having this. This is illegal because you're not allowed to circulate political propaganda in schools in England and Wales. It's against the law. I know, because when I worked for Margaret Thatcher, I was one of those who wrote the law. And the idea was precisely to stop this kind of flagrant political tampering with the objective scientific truth. So Dimmock very bravely took his case to the High Court. It's not a cheap thing to do, and it's not an easy thing for an ordinary lorry driver to do. But he very bravely did it and stood up and faced down the British government, and he won his case to the government's astonishment. And the government was ordered by the court to circulate corrective guidance, which, do you know how long it was? It was 77 pages long, putting right the various mistakes the judge had identified in the absurd film that Gore has been making so much money out of. So
Lord Monckton, today Waxman, who is the new Stalinist, he knows that you say there's been no global warming for at least a decade. Is it not true that there's been 7.5 years of global cooling?
It's been 7.5 years since late in 2001. There's been, and it's not just a little bit of cooling, it's rapid global cooling, at least as fast as any similar period of warming in the previous century. It's steep global cooling. Just now, there is near record sea ice extent in the Antarctic. You heard all that bit about the Wilkins ice shelf melting.
Yes.
In fact, the reverse is the case. There is more sea ice extent in the Antarctic now than there's been at almost any time in the last 30 years. And there's more sea ice extent in the Arctic at the moment than there has been at this time of year in the last 10 years.
Oh, you mean the polar bears can now go home?
Well, of course, they never went anywhere. They are land-based animals anyway. The polar ice is not their natural habitat. They're all born on the land. They can't be born on the ice.
I'm laughing because you're so filled with facts. I'm laughing as though I'm giddy with hearing the truth. I'm living in a sea of propaganda here. It's unbelievable to me that Congress would say you can't testify.
Well, I found it one of the most extraordinarily disfiguring episodes, whether it was me or anybody else. If the elected minority choose to put forward as their celebrity witness somebody who, on any view, knows a great deal more about the reality of the climate than Al Gore will ever know, and the Democrats, knowing that that is the case, decide they do not want the truth about the climate told so that Gore can have a clear run telling his lies, then I think this is an extraordinarily dark day for democracy, and it is a pointer to what is to come. If you do not stop this kind of behavior by people like Waxman and Morky Markey and all these other characters, Jay Inslee, who sit on that committee as Democrats, if you don't now, everybody, reach for your pens and write to these people and tell them that the First Amendment to your Constitution guarantees the right of free speech, and it is not up to them to turn down the chosen witness of the minority just because they find that that chosen witness might talk the inconvenient truth.
Lord Monckton, I think it's very important that in the next segment, the moment we come back, we hear from the man that Congress banned, Lord Monckton. Let's go through the facts together. How do we know that there is no anthropocentric warming, meaning man-induced global warming? Can we do that together when we return, Mr. Monckton?
Look forward.
Thank you. Back in a moment.
Our dangerous over-reliance on carbon-based fuels is at the core of all three of these challenges: the economic, environmental and national security crises. We're borrowing money from China.
We're listening to the biggest liar of the century, one of the greatest con men in history, none other than former Vice President Al Gore, who has made a fortune peddling fear and apocalyptic prophecies. And we have on the show the former science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, who astonishingly was banned from Congress by the Stalinist Democrat Party under Obama. He flew in from London. He was supposed to testify and refute Gore at a hearing on so-called global warming. On arrival at the airport from England, the House Democrats said they don't want Gore humiliated, and so they slammed the door of the Capitol in his face. Is this the America that you want to live in? Do you want to live in a world where you can't hear both sides of a discussion? Well, I warn you, under Obama, that is exactly what's happening. Back with Lord Christopher Monckton, and I suggest you take notes. Lord Monckton, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, it's grand to be back, Michael, and what a terrific show. What a good host you are.
Well, I knew you'd like me. Well, look, here's the thing. I'm very passionate about these subjects for a couple of reasons. I have an actual doctorate in science from the University of California at Berkeley going back to 1978. It doesn't make me a world-class scientist because I don't practice science anymore, but I certainly can read the literature. And you know that the literature does not support this hypothesis of global warming. In fact, the actual scientific evidence supports the opposite, global cooling. And I'd love you to pick up where we left off. You said that from 1645 to 1715, we had global cooling because the sun was at its lowest activity in 10,000 years. And then suddenly around 1700, the sun's activity started again, sunspots, etc., each explosion equal to a multitude of hydrogen bombs. And by the time the pulses reached the Earth, it increased the temperature in the atmosphere by 4 degrees centigrade in 35 years. But your point is this all occurred, the global warming occurred, before the Industrial Revolution, before man emitted so much as a molecule of carbon dioxide outside of his normal breathing.
That's quite right. It was 4 degrees Fahrenheit in 35 years. We must not over-egg the pudding in the way that Al Gore
okay.
did. But yeah.
Okay.
Still a very big increase in a very short time, given that in the okay. whole of the 20th century, in the back end of which we might in theory have had some influence, global temperatures rose in the whole of that century by only 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit. And so what we're looking at is 300 years of global warming between the end of the grand minimum, when the sun was at its most inactive in 10,000 years, and the end of the grand maximum, which more or less coincided with the end of the 20th century, when the sun had risen from its grand minimum up to a grand maximum when it was at its most active in 11,400 years. The biggest increase in solar activity that we're able to infer happened over the last 10,000 years has happened just in these last 300 years. Naturally, we've had 300 years of global warming. And it is precisely because of that fact that most solar physicists attribute the warming that we have seen in the 20th century and in the 19th century and in the 18th century to the sun, because until the last 30 or 40 years of the 20th century, we were not emitting enough CO2 or other greenhouse gases to make any significant difference to the temperature at all on any theory. It just couldn't have been. And that's mm-hmm. why, for instance, Caffetta and West, I was talking about just before the break, the authors of a scientific paper published last year, attributed at least two-thirds of the warming of the 20th century to the sun. And there have been many other papers saying that. The Symposium of the International Astronomical Union said the same back in 2004. It said, expect global cooling to come. Then along comes Al Gore with his sci-fi comedy horror movie issued in January 2005, talking about global warming. Do you know what's happened since then? Who was right? Was it the International Astronomical Union? Was it the scientists? Or was it Al Gore? It was the scientists. Since then, we've had 4 years of global cooling at a rate so rapid that if it carried on at the rate we've seen in the last 4 years, we would be in an ice age by 2050.
I wanted to reiterate it. I've said several times on the show, I'm formally trained in botany, and I was an ethnobotanist for many years traveling the South Pacific collecting medicinal plants, and I had to laugh at the absurdity, the notion of a slight increase of carbon dioxide being so damaging, when in fact the exact opposite is true. It was because of the carbon dioxide that permitted plant life to proliferate on the earth and gave man all of this wonderful food that we've been enjoying for these hundreds of years, and that if God forbid we saw a decrease in carbon dioxide that was catastrophic and we moved into this global cooling, there'd be massive starvation, wouldn't there?
Well, there would indeed, because, of course, cooling is far, far worse and kills far, far more people than a little bit of warming would. Warming is basically not going to kill anyone much, but cooling is very dangerous because, in fact, you're quite right. I mean, as a botanist, you'll know this well, particularly as medical botany is what floats your boat. I mean, the point here is that CO2 is absolutely essential to all plant life.
I know we should generate a little more carbon dioxide, but, you know, let's talk about facts. I'm also an avid boater, and I've looked at tide charts going back a very long period of time here in San Francisco Bay. I have not seen a millimeter of change in the sea level. Is there any evidence of a rising sea level along the lines of Al Gore's catastrophic theories that New York City will soon be underwater?
No, all of that is rubbish. He said it again today. He said, look, it's going to rise 20 feet. But that's when the judge brought him up short and said, no, the Armageddon scenario that he depicts is not based on any scientific view. Sea level, as best we can make it out, and I got this from the world's greatest expert on this, Professor Niklas Murner, who's been researching this for 35 years. He does nothing but sea level. He's written 520 scientific papers on the subject. And he says that in the last century, the 20th century, sea level rose by, get this, not 8 feet, not 4 feet, not 2 feet, not 1 foot, but 8 inches, maybe. Not even as much as that, probably.
Wait, 8 inches over the last 100 years?
Yep, over 100 years. It went up by just 8 inches. Not 8 inches a year.
Well, wait a minute. So Gore may have something here. If we live 1,000 more years, all of us, we may see a rise of 2 feet.
Well, the very worst that could happen, according to the UN's climate panel, and these people are basically bedwetters trying to justify their own existence, so they'll kind of sex it up as best they can, but they can't make out a maximum of more than 2 feet in the whole of the 21st century. But what's actually happening is that sea level has stopped rising altogether. Al Gore didn't mention that today, and you won't have heard that in your newspaper or on your CNN or on your MSNBC. They will somehow not have bothered to tell you that in the last 3 years there has been no statistically significant rise in sea level at all. It has stopped.
Lord Monckton, let's talk about the politics of this, because you've raised a very important point, and it goes to the heart of this. You were banned by Stalinist Democrats from even speaking and presenting your facts, which is very worrisome. But why is it that extreme leftists embrace global warming while the entire conservative intelligentsia understands it as a big lie? Why has this broken down along political lines? And moreover, the second part of the question is, in the UK at least, where I think there's a chance for a little more open-mindedness, I could be mistaken, are there any liberal so-called or labor scientists who agree with you?
There are very few on the political left who are willing to say that they agree. There are many who of course know perfectly well that the science behind this is to use a technical term, bollocks. Am I allowed to say that on the air? Well, too late. I've said it now.
oh, yes. They don't know what it means here in America, so it's perfectly safe.
I probably get away with that one then.
No. The FCC is filled with so many dummies, they wouldn't even know where to look to find what the word means.
They can look it up under cojones, then.
They can look it up. It's next to coprolites, I think.
Something like that. Anyway, it's basically rubbish, and most scientists know that it's rubbish. Very few scientists dare to say that it's rubbish because the left is ruthlessly in control of the academic world and the universities. And anyone who dares to say, just a moment, none of this adds up, it's all nonsense, they get penalized, they get moved to ever smaller offices with no daylight.
Oh, my God, it's right out of the ex-Soviet Union.
It's just like that. I can tell you of a colleague of mine who is working at one of your most eminent institutions. I won't name it or him. It would be unkind to them both. But he has been moved successively in the last 5 years to ever smaller offices. They've been trying to get rid of him, but they can't because he is independently funded.
We are entering a very dangerous phase in Western civilization, which I never thought I would see. I certainly see it coming only from the Democrat side. They will not permit any debate whatsoever on a subject that they want to control. And so, therefore, I had Lord Monckton thus far on the Savage Nation. He has to leave us in less than a minute. I want my listeners to follow your work at scienceandpublicpolicy.org. Lord Monckton, God bless you. We're going to have you on regularly here on the Savage Nation. Great job, sir.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Names of some of those banned from entering the country because of fears their views will foster hatred or encourage violence have been released. Dan Shaw is our Home Affairs correspondent.
What may surprise some people is that on the list is a US radio shock doc, radio chat show host Michael Savage, who has professed views about a number of things, including rape, homosexuality, immigration. He's written widely a number of books, very popular, listen to American chat show host.
All the stories have been told of kings and days of old, but there's no England now.
So among those excluded, two leaders of a violent Russian skinhead gang, a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard and a neo-Nazi, but also a radio talk show host. Isn't that sort of suppressing freedom of speech, in a sense?
Well, I have to say, this radio talk show host isn't your sort of Terry Wogan-type character by any means. This is somebody who has fallen into the category of fomenting hatred, of such extreme views and expressing them in such a way that it's actually likely to cause inter-community tension or even violence if that person were allowed into the country.
Well, I don't know who this pork eater is, but I have a question for her. I hear she's the Home Secretary of the former England. When has this witch heard my show since it is not syndicated in England? When has this witch listened to my program in England? And which show or shows is this witch referring to? Now, I will say this, that when I awoke this morning in the 7 o'clock range and went down to my computer, I turned on various websites. I go to the Drudge Report because it is the newspaper of today amongst anyone with a brain. You know that, and I know that. And it has some great, you know, linkages. I was shocked, and I thought I was seeing things when it said that Michael Savage banned in England. I said, am I seeing? So the first thought I had was, darn, there goes the summer trip to receive their dental care. And then I'm going to have to give up my summer trip where I was going to do a tour of British restaurants for their famous cuisine. But then it dawned on me who they had linked me with. I thought this is a joke or a mistake. They linked me up with Russian skinheads who had murdered 10 people, Islamists who had smashed in the heads of Jewish children with rifle butts, preachers in the UK who call for the destruction and overthrow of the government. How could they put Michael Savage in the same league with mass murderers when I have never avowed violence? Had I avowed violence, I wouldn't be on the radio. I wouldn't have lasted 15 minutes, let alone 15 years. In fact, my opinions are more in keeping with the mainstream of America than you would like to believe. I am closer to the heartland of America than is, let us say, this woman. I want to remind you, though, that the whole point of the First Amendment, which we enjoy in America, and apparently these Brits do not enjoy, is to protect offensive speech, not polite speech. Let me repeat that. The whole point of the First Amendment was to protect offensive speech, not polite speech. And I want to remind you, liberals, whatever happened to your famous sayings from the 60s, I may disagree with you, but I will fight to the death your right to say it. Now, I suggest that my 8 to 10 million listeners cancel their trips to England immediately and tell your travel agents why. I suggest you stop buying English-made goods. I don't know what they make anymore, but whatever they make, I suggest you don't buy anymore. If they want to play hardball, we'll play hardball. Will they ban my listeners from attending, going to their wonderful, great nation as well? I mean, I've been banned from Britain. I hadn't planned on going there. I hadn't been there in over 25 years. And when I woke up this morning, I thought, this can't be true. But the point is, today it's me, tomorrow it's someone else. And my second reaction was that the land of the Magna Carta has now become the land of the Mini Carta. They published 16 of the 22 names of those banned from England since October, but they didn't include six additional names, right? Now, I'd like to know who it is who put together this list. I'd like to know which six names are not being published. I'd like to know why they have not banned, for example, Kim Jong-il II, who allegedly has starved over a million of his own fellow countrymen to death. Is Kim Jong-il banned from England? What about Chavez, Hugo Chavez? Is he banned from England? He has driven half the Jews out of his nation with his hate talk. Is he banned by Home Secretary Jackie Smith? No, she picked an easy target. She doesn't know my show, obviously, but somebody in America sent her my name, and as a result of this, I'm going to sue her. I have seven lawyers working on this right now. Britain defamed Michael Savage, putting me in a league with mass murderers because of my opinions. For this lunatic, Jackie Smith, the Home Secretary of England, to link me up with skinheads who are killing people in Russia, to put me in league with Hamas murderers who kill Jews on buses, is defamation. Moreover, I've been endangered by this lunatic. She has painted a target on my back, linking me with people who are in prison for killing people. Does she not think this will bring harm to me? And if she does, will she pay for it? We'll find out soon enough what the laws of England protect and don't protect. But even liberals listening to this show should be disturbed at the move by the British government, because they should wonder who's next. Today it's me, tomorrow it's you. And I have to say to you that this is, in some ways, people are saying Savage is a badge of honor. Savage is a good thing to be on this list. Savage, this is the last gasp of a troubled Labour Party that is out of touch with the voters of England. According to the most recent surveys, Labour and highly unpopular Prime Minister Gordon Brown are expected to be swept from power by Conservatives at the next general election. That's all well and good. But will the Conservatives undo the damage that this lunatic has done? We'll have to wait and see. The Home Office of England said that I was banned because I am engaging in unacceptable behavior. Behavior? How is it behavior for me to publish books? Now, I thought about this, and it could be that my latest book, Psychological Nudity, on the cover of which you see Michael Savage and my 10-pound dog, Teddy, it could be that One-Armed Frank or Fat Al's Tuna or Dead Man's Pants or Woodchuck Bill or Love by the Sewer Plant, it could be that one of these stories is offensive to those in England. I really don't know. I do know this, that I've written many bestsellers, but prior to my political life, I had written about 18 books in the field of health that were well-received as well. Perhaps they're out of touch with the English today. Perhaps my books on vitamins and nutrition are considered a threat to the social order in England. Some would say, Savage, don't be so upset. It's going to help the sales of Psychological Nudity. Well, okay, great. Go on to michaelsavage.com and buy a copy and send it to a friend in England and tell him to walk around with it proudly. Do me a favor. It's not going to change my lifestyle. What other books have been banned and what other authors have been banned in relatively modern history? I'm in very good company if you want to look at it from that point of view. Did you know that Brave New World by Aldous Huxley was banned in Ireland in 1932? How about Candide by Voltaire, seized by U.S. Customs in 1930? How about Dr. Zhivago by Boris Pasternak? Dr. Zhivago was banned within the ex-Soviet Union until 1988 because its criticism of the Bolshevik Party. Now, that's very close to this group in England, isn't it? Did you know that Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift banned in Ireland? Did you know that Orwell's 1984 was banned by the USSR in 1950? Did you know that 1984 was nearly banned by the USA and UK in the early 60s during the Cuban Missile Crisis because it was thought to disturb the social order? How about the Satanic Verses by Rushdie? Did you know that The Sorrows of Young Werther by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe was banned in several European countries? Why? Because The Sorrows of Young Werther encouraged the suicidal deaths amongst some susceptible individuals. Oh, as well, The Call of the Wild by Jack London, banned in Yugoslavia and Italy. So in that sense, I could say, well, okay, take it with a grain of salt, look at what's coming from. On the other hand, this is a very dangerous thing indeed. This lunatic, Jackie Smith, in my opinion, has defamed me, and if possible, I will sue her personally. This is the Savage Nation. How do you feel about England banning Michael Savage? Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that this is a good thing for freedom? Do you think that this is a good thing for liberalism? Do you think that this is a good thing for America to do? Do you think that I should be banned from the UK for denouncing the acts of terrorism committed and promoted by other individuals on the same unwelcome list? After all, I've denounced them. I've denounced the murderers that they list on that list. But to put me in the same list is astonishing. And what about those who compile this list of people to be banned from England? We were put on that list for our particular beliefs. Is that not correct? Well, by their own definition, shouldn't they be banned from their own country? Well, and by the way, did Reverend Wright make that list? Did Reverend Wright make that list? Is he banned from England? Was the mass murderer Kim Jong-il banned from England? My talk neither tolerates or encourages acts of violence, and yet it has been placed on the same level as those who have committed murder and acts of terrorism, and that shows you just how far England has fallen, and fallen, and fallen, and fallen. And we're going to talk about that today. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. If you don't know what I'm talking about, please hang up and don't listen to this program. Because if you don't read the web and if you don't know what's going on in the news, you are a person out of touch with reality. Many of my colleagues in the media have reacted with horror, some of whom are liberals. They're astonished, they're offended, they're frightened, they're angered. That should tell you all you need to know.
Savage.
Shall I tell you the story of Love by the Sewer Plant? In order to do that, I have to set this up. Play the Shabub Shabub song, I Only Have Eyes For You. I want to go back in time now. And I hope that the girl involved is not listening. I pray to God.
I can't see anyone but
we're talking Springland, New York. Not Springland. We're talking, I don't know the town anymore. We're talking Route 42. We're talking 56, 57. We're talking a sewer plant. We're talking about Love by the Sewer Plant. First Love by the Sewer Plant. Now, this girl was so beautiful that the, like, it was like summer stock. Turn that on. They can't listen to me in the music. They got the mood already. We said it. In other words, this is a small hotel, like, you know, nothing fancy. The owner was a former boxer, a pugilist. He was the one where I told you that Jackie worked at the hotel, got thrown in the pool. I don't remember the name of the hotel. But he was a tough guy, this guy, genuinely tough guy. And that if he got into an argument with anyone who worked for me, beat them up and threw them off the property, that type. Everyone was terrified of him. Old school, New York Jewish kind of street fighter type. So he ruled this little hotel that he had like with an iron thumb, an iron whatever, iron boot. He was a tough guy, and things ran right. Nothing ever went wrong. No one robbed cutlery. No one talked back. So anyway, I'm a kid. There's a kid there, and boom, it's Love by the Sewer Plant across down the thing in the river by the Neversink River. The water was so cold that when you waded across it, your feet turned blue. I'll tell Love by the Sewer Plant, but starting with the Shabub Shabub again. Now I got time to tell it. Again, they can't find it.
My love must be a kind of blind.
This is unbelievable. I lost my desire to talk already.
I can't see anyone but
you. On the uptake,
you.
They're not. I got a migraine. Just clicked in. Whole right side of the head is out. They don't understand this. How could the audience follow my brain? I got to make them follow. How? Explain to them. All right. Okay, turn it off now. It's 56-57, Plymouth Fury. 59-59. My uncle had a Plymouth Fury, I think. I'm not sure. Somewhere around then. Outside one of the hotels in the Catskill Mountains. I'm still young, 15. I don't know how old I was, something like that. So, fall in love, first love by the sewer plant. Here's how it is. This girl was so stunningly gorgeous, like just really beautiful, that the theater companies would come through. They had like an entertainment in these hotels, like they call it a casino. At night they'd have entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a comedian who was terrible, a juggler, a balloon man, who then eventually the father of the guy who went on XM or Sirius. His father was a balloon man, allegedly, who went around making pornographic images with balloons, as the son does verbally. Things like that. In other words, schlocky entertainment. So, nevertheless, they thought they were artists. You got to understand that. Even though they were schlocky entertainment, let's say they could paint in velvet paintings, they're still a painter. In their mind, they're Van Gogh. They were theatrical, and everyone else was bourgeois, you know. The other people ate the borscht, and they ate the chav. In other words, they were the artistes, so they understood. So, in other words, some of these entertainers came around, and they looked at this girl, and they came running up. I was holding her hand and walking with her. We were kids. And they said, Manny, I wanted you to see this girl. This is the girl I was telling you about. And they, like, looked at her like she was a specimen of, you know, like biblical beauty. So to make a long story short, it's just young love by the sewer plant. And what I meant was, where are you going to go when you're a kid? You got nowhere to go. So we took a walk down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill. Jack and Jill went down the hill. And it was a long slope down to the Neversink River. And there was a sewer treatment plant, which occasionally, as you well know, with sewer treatment plants, they're not exactly, they don't smell that good. But kids don't care. They can override anything, particularly when the lust hits them. So the two kids walk down the hill, they cross the river, and their feet, they roll up the dungarees, take off the shoes, the legs are blue, and they have a little moment of passion together. And it was his first moment of passion. It was not exactly on the level of a complete moment of passion, but for him it was the first of that type. So now the kid is starstruck and walked like stars in his eyes after that. There were not enough stars in the sky that night, in the black sky, and the billions of stars, to equal the passion that he had for the world, where he thought he could literally reach out, grab a star, and fly away. That's how phenomenal he felt as a youngster. But then, of course, as you well know, nothing like that lasts. So what I'm getting at with the story is that it was by a sewer plant, and there's nothing more to it, and boom, and now play some John Coltrane, because there's no more to the story that I care to tell, because if I do, it'll become a pantomime, and I don't want to embarrass myself with a pantomime of something that was quite beautiful. So why don't you play some John Coltrane so they'll understand why it ended that way.
Listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Hippies who gathered here in San Francisco during the Summer of Love went on to raise families, write books, and even to run corporations. And they carried with them the counterculture values once nurtured in places like the Haight. And along the way, they changed the world we live in. Today, our generation is the counterculture generation. We may not look like hippies anymore, but many of us still embrace their values.
Now, the message I have is an old one. It's the simplest and most classic message ever been passed on in world history. It's those six words, drop out, turn on, then come back and tune it in. And then drop out again and turn on and tune it back in.
Come on, pigs of Western civilization. Eat more grease. Eat more marbled sirloin, more pork and gravy. Lard up the dressing. Fry chicken in boiling oil. Carry it dribbling to gray climes, snowed with salt. Little lambs covered with mint roast in racks, surrounded by roast potatoes wet with butter sauce. Buttered veal medallions in creamy saliva. Buttered beef by glistening mountains of French fries. Stroganoffs in white hot sour cream. Chops soaked in olive oil, surrounded by olives. Salty feta cheese, followed by Roquefort and Blue and Stilton, thirsty for wine, beer, Coca-Cola, Fanta, champagne, Pepsi, Retsina, Arak, whiskey, vodka. Ah!
No, that was not Howard Dean. That was one of the most vile individuals of the last century, perhaps one of the worst people in the history of America, worse than Sacco and Vanzetti. The two of them, Leary and Ginsburg, did more to damage more millions of people than any two people in the history of this country. Now, they are lauded by the vermin in the media. Mind you, I saw a series called Summer of Love on the History Channel. Now, I know that the History Channel is owned by NBC, which means that it's a biased left-wing report, which, of course, you'd expect from NBC. They can't do anything right, at least anything American, in my opinion. But I want to focus for a few minutes on the damage that the hippie generation is still doing to America, as exemplified by the hippies who are running the Democrat Party, hippies such as Nancy Pelosi, hippies such as Howard Dean. I can go down the list and I can tell you that there's a reason for this anti-American, anti-family, anti-military, anti-police madness. I have alluded to this many times on the Savage Nation, and as you know, you can't predict what I'm going to do from one day to the next because I don't really have any predictable patterns, and whatever interests me, I'm going to do. But I intend today to present the case for you to show that there's a distinct connection between the weakness of the West, the decadence of the West, the drug addiction of the West, the homosexualization of the West, the feminization of the West. In other words, the lack of character in the West and the summer of love and the vermin who were behind it and the vermin who are now running the media and the government media complex. Now, the best way for me to begin is, again, playing some of the sound of that period. I played for you one of the songs from the period. I think it was called, what was this called? Peace of My Heart, Big Brother in the Holding Company, whatever that was, with Janis Joplin. Now, she's held up as a role model and an icon. She died of a drug overdose. Jimi Hendrix, fine musician, drug overdose. The hippie era, while still held up as a great period of peace and love, was actually a period of the exact opposite. What it did was usher in the death of America as we know it. And I am struggling every day to try to awaken many of you. Some of you are former hippies. Some of you lived through the summer of love, whether it was in San Francisco, New York, or Atlanta. It doesn't really matter. And some of you just had a good time. But what you don't know is the summer of love was not a spontaneous summer of love. The hippie generation was not a spontaneous hippie generation. It was funded. It was paid for, rather, and it was organized by the Communist Party USA and the internationalists who are opposed to our sovereignty. What you don't realize is most of the problems we have today, whether it be crime or drug addiction or abortion or euthanasia, is all connected to this hippie generation. And the whole struggle going on in America today is between those who would put the final knife into the heart of the animal called America, or the bull called America, or the eagle called America, and those of us who want to kill those who want to kill us. It's as simple as that. It is a struggle for the survival of America. The heart and the soul of America is up for grabs. The vermin on the left have us by the throat. The vermin on the left have us on the ground. The vermin on the left act like they're peace and love. They're the exact opposite of peace and love. They mean to harm the country even further. And I am telling you, there are millions of us. There are more of us than there are of them. The problem is we don't control the media. We don't control the government. In fact, we have no influence over the media, except for a few radio talk shows and an occasional smattering here and there on television of family or American values. You are going to be the people who save this country. It's not going to be me, and it's not going to be we. You say, well, what's he talking about? It's all hyperbole. Well, you could say anything you want. The summer of love washed across the world. The reason that we are suffering today at the hands of Al-Qaeda, The reason we were struck on September 11th, 2001, the reason the USS Cole was bombed with no reaction from Bill Clinton, the hippie, the first hippie president, by the way, is precisely because of the perverted values of the Summer of Love. That's the point I'm trying to make. Now, again, I'm dealing with the Summer of Love, where if you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, summertime will be a love in there. Play that song for the people who don't know what I'm talking about. I'd like them to hear a little bit of the Summer of Love. Was right there. This has been popularly seen as a period of love and idealism, when in fact it was a summer of the collapse of American civilization. The History Channel Our Generation series on the Summer of Love will show you the opposite. But in fact, what it did was usher in the death of the character of America, which we're still trying to recover from. Wide scale sexual abandon, leading to STDs, leading to AIDS, leading to drug addiction, all goes back to the Summer of Love, which began, by the way, during the summer of 1967. Now, what caused all of the excitement was the free sex. And most of the people who hung out in the parks and let their hair grow long and danced around, well, they were just looking for a little nookie. That's all they wanted. And that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Sex is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, motivator on the planet for most people. It's a given fact going back to the beginning of time. We all understand that. And when sex is permitted to be used like this, it can be used for very, very bad things as well. In the 1930s, following the depression of the late 1920s, the stock market crash, the Communist Party USA made very, very big inroads amongst the working poor and those who were unemployed. And one of the principal methods they had of gaining members in the Communist Party USA amongst longshoremen and amongst workers in general, were putting in communist broads into the recruiting halls. Communist dances were announced. The men went and they got free sex. It was free love. They could care less about communism. All they wanted was what men wanted from the beginning of time. But it was the love, the free love, or the sex that was used to hook the people in. And that brings us to today. It's the pornography and the drugs, stupid. You know what? I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do. Do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Follow the bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker, the bouncing Prozac pill. I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Ooh. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone. Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy, and everyone else is happy, and you're the only one who is feeling lonely, or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee-hee and it, and the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, you know, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good. And maybe it is for you. You know, maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind. Life is a bore and life is difficult and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hell. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, if you gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. Then you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations. The most. Someone who actually believed in the Word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that, you know, is the way to go. You know, there are. What I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What are you going to kill yourself? So the government keeps promising you stuff they can't deliver in order to hypnotize you like Obama and Hillary and Edwards. All they would do was hypnotizing the schmuck out there that George Bush is mean, the Republicans are evil, and if they're elected, they're going to make you happier because they're going to give you free prescription drugs. Well, okay, buddy, you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in Obama or Hillary Clinton. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there are people who are younger than me who can't do radio, but my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking about.
He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be hard, that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in Ding Dong School the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby, I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host who imagined doing his own daughter and son and his son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest a Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel. Oh, he doesn't feel like you want him to feel. You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces, and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Now you understand where we're at?
Savage.